You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marjorie Egan. Fresh off a deal with former Massachusetts Treasurer Tim Cahill, which ended the criminal prosecution, and the filing of a brief in the Supreme Court case that could change the gay marriage landscape forever, joining us to answer our questions and yours at 877-301-8970 is the Attorney General of Massachusetts, Martha Coakley. Welcome, Martha Coakley.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. You guys are talking slower than you used to talk.
Because I'm relaxed.
Dude,
you know what it is?
I can see that.
I'm so relaxed. It is unbelievable.
It's a relaxing kind of show.
You can speak more slowly, too, if you'd like, Attorney General.
I am.
Thank
I'm
you.
Slowing down.
I want to give the email, too. It's BPR. That's short for Boston Public Radio.
Say it slowly, Marjorie.
At WGBH.org. BPR at WGBH.org. So, Martha Coakley, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Tim Cahill settlement. Emily Rooney had the former treasurer Tim Cahill on Greater Boston. I think it was last night. Perhaps it was
a couple
night
nights
before.
Ago.
Yeah, I think it was two nights ago. And here's what he had to say to Emily Rooney about that case.
It's a civil finding as opposed to a criminal finding. I would never have agreed, and that's one of the reasons it took so long, to agree to any of the criminal findings at all. And I wasn't going to admit guilt on a criminal case, and I don't admit guilt. I mean, I was not convicted.
What do you make of what he just said, Martha Coakley?
Well, that is true. He did not plead guilty to criminal charges. What we did resolve, which I think is a fair resolution, by the way, with his admission in a written statement before the court that has resulted in him being on pretrial probation on those pending criminal charges, that acknowledged that he broke the law, that he knew or should have known that it was an ethical violation to run those ads, use that lottery money specifically, and this was about specifically doing it to help his campaign for governor. So the facts matter in this. But we think it's a fair resolution. We wanted him to acknowledge that what he did was wrong. He did that. He is paying a $100,000 fine, which is significant. It's one of the biggest we've had for an
it
ethics fine.
It is huge.
And, you know, what he says afterwards is up to him, but it's a document filed with the court. He acknowledged in court that he broke the law, and I actually think it's a fair and just resolution.
Putting aside the resolution, though, doesn't it, the sense I've gotten when I've heard you on the radio or TV in the last handful of days is you seem to be a bit upset with his characterization of this deal. Are you?
I've heard other characterizations than the one you just played, actually. It's not my call. I just want to make sure that the public gets a fair view of what we did, which is resolve this with a civil penalty, a large civil penalty, with an acknowledgement that he broke the law.
I'm sorry.
When you say there are other characterizations, what are you referring
well,
to?
Well, he's been on other media outlets. Yeah. I haven't seen them all, but I've heard them, and people have asked me on other media outlets about things that he has said. Look, I wish him well. This is not personal. I knew Tim. I worked with him. He was a constitutional officer. It was never personal. This came to our attention, as you know, because he was sued his campaign back a few years ago. But the specific thing that matters in this case, it seems to me, was that we had emails that said the lottery had up to $2 million. He had a focus group that told him as he was running for governor and had been attacked by the Republican Governors Association, the one thing that resonated with voters was that there was a well-run lottery. So for a period of time when he would not ordinarily have run lottery ads, he took those ads and ran them at the same time overlapping with his ads for governor that said, without him in it, because they knew, we saw emails that said he knew he couldn't use his name, that would be clearly wrong, but they plan to use that money to run those ads to say this is a well-run lottery, it's not by chance, and they overlapped with his campaign ads that said Tim Cahill runs the lottery really well. We said then we think that it violated the law, we believed it. He said, I did nothing wrong. As you know, look, we had a hung jury. We had a jury out for several days. And my sense, I don't have any inside scoop, is that they struggled with the conspiracy law. But I think there was a concern about what he had done. We felt all along, had we been able to resolve it shorter trial, we would have done it. We'll do it in the future. But he always said he did nothing wrong. The good news is he came in after that. We talked extensively and he agreed to acknowledge that he broke the law and that he would pay the fine.
You anticipate my next question. You're saying that you could not have cut the same deal that you ended up cutting last week prior to trial?
Well, it takes two to, and I don't call it cutting a deal.
Well, whatever, I'm sorry.
No, well, look, in any case like this, we're always going to talk to counsel and their clients about a resolution short of trial, if it makes sense, if it's in the public interest. But up until this time, you know, the word was we didn't do anything wrong. And so It takes two to reach a resolution. I'm glad we did it. I think it's the right resolution. It's a new statute. I know a lot of people said this is business as usual. When you look at the facts of this case, this was not business as usual.
Can we talk about business as usual in another setting, which is literally putting me over the edge? A couple of years ago, it came out that members of boards of nonprofit healthcare organizations were paying what I considered, well, you considered too, exorbitant amounts to their board members, despite the fact it was allegedly charitable work. A couple of the organizations, including Blue Cross, agreed to stop paying, and in some cases, $78,000 to sit on a board, that sort of thing. They wait a couple of years. Now they're back with slightly reduced board fees and payments. I don't even know what all the verbiage is, but you know what I mean.
$30,000.
Well, no, in some cases, $50,000-some. $30,000 for this,
yes.
Whatever. Essentially, what it seems they did is they waited till the furor died down, and then they're back to the same old garbage that happened before. One, are you upset about it? And two, are you going to do anything? But don't you have a bill pending on Beacon Hill that nothing happened on?
There is legislation pending still that would prescribe, except in certain circumstances, payment to directors of not-for-profits. We think that's what historically had been the case. That should be the case. In fairness, I will say they made some changes around rotating the board. There will be new members coming in. They indicated to us they did some market surveys and they did some consultation. We still disagree with that result, however, that they are a not-for-profit. We do not believe that this board, which in fact, you know, voted to reinstitute payment for itself, should be the law. We are limited as without a statutory change now as to what we can do.
And nobody on Beacon Hill is dying to give you that statutory authority.
Well, there's some interest in it, frankly. But there's 7,000 bills filed every year. There are a lot of things we're dealing with. You know, we have a very volatile healthcare market. There's so many issues going on in that market. Look, we have now new requirements, so they and every other not-for-profit have to file a lot more information with us about this. We're going to keep monitoring it.
Your position, I just want to be clear, is that there should be no money, not the $500 per meeting or the $1,500 per long meeting or if you have to travel. I mean, should there be any money at all?
Well, look, we appreciate that certain kinds of compensation for expenses, and that's what those $500 amounts are. This is equivalent to what many people make in a year,
yeah.
These kinds of salaries, and they are substantial payments. They were substantial in the past, and we could not, they could not justify why they were entitled to get them.
My blood pressure is going up again as it went 20 minutes. You know, this all came on the heels of the former head, Cleve Killingsworth of Blue Cross. At the time, I was about to say absconded, which I know is a term of art, so I won't say that. Left his job, losing tens of thousands of members at Blue Cross, essentially, in my estimation, failing and getting $11 million for his failure. Deirdre Cummings from Massberg in the Globe story asks a great question. One would question why they were able to run their business, Blue Cross, for the last few years without paying people and why they've decided they have to start doing it again now. What is the answer? Like, well, the answer is because time has passed and because people aren't as aggro. They have short memories. Isn't that the answer to the question?
Well, they say that in order to get the kind of people they need to help run this business, in other words, to attract people and to compensate them for their time, they need to do this. But that's true in the for-profit world. And that's our argument, that you still haven't really demonstrated to us, as you are a charitable organization, you get all the benefits of being a charitable organization, why you need to do this. So stay tuned. I mean, they've gone back to doing it. And I know that we're going to continue to look at this because it is concerning.
If you have any questions for the Attorney General, it's Martha Coakley. She's in the studio with us. Our number is 877-301-8970.
You know, this is not your area that you are in charge of. You're not anything to do with the criminal. Well, you are the criminal justice system, but not the prisons. But there was a story in this morning's Boston Globe about another former constitutional officer, Sal DeMacy, who, of course, is doing 8 years for pocketing some money. And we all watched the trial. But the crux of the story was an interview with his wife, Debbie, who talked about how even though he had what looked like a very problematic lump on his neck, which of course turned out to be cancer in his neck and tongue area, the Bureau of Prisons didn't do anything about it for months after months. And we know about this because Sal DeMacy was a big deal here in Massachusetts and because he was well represented and he has the ability to get his story out in the paper, although I'm not saying he pushed it, but you know, we know about this because it's Sal DeMacy. I just couldn't believe it, that people go to federal prisons, first of all, miles and miles away from the family. I don't get that whatsoever, unless you're trying to separate someone from a gang. Why he's even down there in these far-flung prisons in Kentucky, et cetera. But also, isn't anybody going to do anything about not treating a prisoner. Because if it's happening to Sal DeMasi, God knows what's happening to hundreds and hundreds of other prisoners who have no one representing them.
Well, I don't know the facts, Marjorie, on this. And I appreciate no one should, you know, suffer a lack of diagnosis or treatment in prison. That's not what it's designed to do. I know this has been an issue for a while. He has been able to get attention for it. And in some of the reasons that people go to different facilities does have to do with the access and treatment and care that they can get. I'm not saying that happened in this case. So it is a little bit beyond my purview in terms of what they
do. But you knew him. You knew him.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Look, Massachusetts is a small state. Boston is a big town. But I knew him. I worked with him. And look, there's a body of law that says prisoners are entitled to, you know, diagnosis and treatment, whether it's dental care or diagnosed cancer. I'm sure that there are advocates for him, and there should be in this case, but I don't, you know, I don't know the specifics, and
yeah.
I don't know if he was treated unfairly in the prison system.
Well, the juxtaposition of the treatment of Sal DeMasi and a man who killed his wife, possibly now getting a state-funded sex change operation, he's a murderer, it just seems there's no equivalency there. What the heck is going on in the prison system? It's obviously one state prisoner, one federal prisoner, but it's very upsetting
in terms of plain old justice. Actually, they're both federal prisoners.
Cosmic
isn't South
a state.
Oh, he is a
he's
state.
He's in state. It's
oh,
in
state.
Federal court
sorry.
Because
yeah.
the allegation is
right,
a federal.
Right. Yes. Hey, can I ask you a couple political questions
sure.
for a second?
One, doesn't mean I'll answer them, but you
fine.
Can ask.
Well, yeah, I'll ask you a non-political question first to segue into it.
Sure.
I just realized when we were in our old digs, you were kind enough to do what you do for all your colleagues, apparently, on special occasions, the Attorney General's office. You wrote us a beautiful poem. I believe it was called Ode to Jim and Marjorie. Do you remember that?
I do.
Where's the poem? No, I'm serious. We just started here, too. Where's the poem? Where's the
well,
poem?
I want to see how you do first yeah. before
okay,
I spend a lot of time
okay, fine,
memorializing
that.
It.
Two political questions.
Ask
one,
in a
what's the
years.
Latest on the governor deal with you? I know you love your job. You want to do this job forever. You have no intentions of running. Where are, I mean, realistically speaking, governor season is imminent after we get through this special Senate election. I'm serious. You're not even thinking about running for governor, Martha Coakley.
Governor season is imminent. Now,
it
is. Interesting.
No, I'm serious.
You know, we have a Halloween season. Right now we have a senator season.
Have
That's
you ever
right.
spoken to at least a political advisor about running for governor, Martha Coakley?
I haven't. And I haven't. Really talked about
you're
that.
You're not looking at me as you're saying that. Do you know
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Well,
that's
I'm
that's
looking,
indicative of something,
I'm
is it
looking
not?
Looking at your view.
Oh.
You know, I'm often accused of that. It's something that, you know, when I argue or when I think, I tend to, like, just not focus.
No
but,
intention.
And I'd rather look at Marjorie, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are you making a Sherman-esque statement? I'm serious. Is there any circumstance under which you can imagine between now and, the start of governor season?
But see, you're asking a hypothetical that I can't answer. And the answer is right now. I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about this job and frankly, all the stuff we're able to do in it. I love this job. I love being Attorney General. I love
I'm
the
sure
work
do.
We've done in mortgage. I love the way we're developing in our Public Integrity Division, the way to work with campaign finance and ethics to try and send a message that it won't be business as usual in Massachusetts. I love what we're doing. We've got a big project around energy and keeping energy costs down. And I get to work with my fellow AGs around the country on challenging DOMA.
Yes.
We're
going to
talk about that in a
second.
Yes.
Stuff.
But when
and,
I hear
and
that,
like
when
today,
I, yeah.
you know, and I brought this in for you, Jim, but today is White Ribbon
yeah.
Day.
Yeah, explain to people. I had two of the people who were leaders of that from Brigham Women's last night on television.
It is, and it's ironic that verdict came back today, Marjorie, that you had written about.
Oh,
Fujita case.
First degree murder, guilty.
Yeah, just sad all around, obviously. Prosecutor did a great job. I know
Lisa McGovern.
Yeah,
Lisa
she's
McGovern.
Terrific, and she's done a lot of work in domestic violence. There are two families' lives who are ruined. You know, she's dead, and he, as you noted. But today is the day that men who support challenging violence against women wear white ribbons
really?
To say this is not appropriate. It's not. It should not be in anybody's options. And you wonder what sort of causes a young man to think it is okay to do this. A young man that you would never think, or an older man, or a husband, boyfriend.
The estranged husband of that woman in Vermont who hit her in the head with a baseball bat and then threw lie, industrial strength lie on her. And we had the doctor on the phone with us for a half hour yesterday who did the surgery. This is really important. And again, there's a ceremony at the State House at 1 o'clock with
yep.
Governor Patrick, I'm sure
yep.
you're involved.
And it's really important. So I brought that for you, Jim.
You know, that was
Jim,
a good diversionary.
Jim, I think you should put that on immediately.
I will, but I'm not done. I'm sorry. It's a diversionary thing.
Diversionary.
To a degree. I mean, it's a wonderful cause. When you say all the great things you can do as Attorney General, I think you would agree you can do a broader spectrum of great things if one is the governor of the Commonwealth. So every time I hear you say, I love my job and I'm doing, and I believe every word there, but why would you not want to do have a vehicle to do more things and a larger bully pulpit? I really don't get that at all.
Well, then I can't help you with that,
okay,
Jim.
Fine. Okay, fine.
You know, as a you know this, an attorney gets to do certain kinds of things. We get to bring cases. It's a different job. It's a very different job, obviously.
It is. Okay,
you didn't ask her about Consumer Protection Week.
It
Who
is.
Knew? Did you know
yeah,
it was Consumer Protection Week? What does that mean? That we get a refund more quickly at CVS, or what exactly?
Well, it's really about educating people to financial literacy, you know, understanding contracts, long-term contracts, whether you're talking about buying a car or a house or a cell phone. Make sure you know what you're doing, because it's always easier to do a little bit of homework ahead of time. Read the contract, sleep on a big purchase before you do it. And if you have questions about the buyer, the product, whatever, check. There are a lot of resources out there so people can make good
before
decisions.
Before we go to the calls and our lines are full, what's the number at the Attorney General's office if people want to deal with consumer issues or other issues?
The main number for general consumer issues is 617-727-8400. If people have a problem with a mortgage and they're interested in seeing if they might qualify for a modified loan or a principal reduction, they should call our home corps.
What's that?
Which is 617-573-5333.
And tell them the Attorney General told you to call. Let's go to Cambridge. You are first with Attorney General Martha Coakley on Boston Public Radio. Welcome, David.
Hi, David.
I'm Attorney General Coakley. How are you doing?
Fine. Martha's good.
Martha. Later this year, there's going to be a growing surge of all sorts of protests and civil disobedience around the, global warming generally, and maybe the XL pipeline approval specifically. What do you anticipate in terms of what's going to happen? And I know you're not advising, the Attorney General is not going to be advising these protesters, but what's the biggest bang for the buck? I mean, in terms of the greatest disruption short of getting actually locked up.
That's one of the great questions.
That's an interesting question.
I mean, what can you do before you
get arrested? That is what he's asking. What is not a horrible question. That's a great question. We get it, David. What's the answer, Martha?
Well, I mean, you could probably look to some of the Occupy Boston movement in terms of you are allowed to protest. We protect First Amendment, but we also have the countervailing public safety issues. There is the concept of civil disobedience, obviously, that you break the law knowing that the consequence will be you'll be arrested probably. So, there are plenty of organizations that, probably not me, but probably organizations that could assist you with that. I think you bring up a good topic, though, because it's interesting to note that our new energy secretary and our new secretary of EPA have come from Massachusetts.
That's just this week.
One of the reasons I love being attorney general, Jim, is that we are focusing in May. We're going to have a big energy summit, and we're looking at some of the issues. Sometimes environmentalists are here and energy folks are here, but when you really sit down and think about where we need to go to keep it cost-effective and clean, we're not always that far apart, but we need to do more on it. So I appreciate there's attention on it. It's really important for next generation.
Thank you for the call,
David. Thanks, David.
Thanks, and good luck.
What happened to the Occupy crowd? They sort of disappeared. I had such high hopes.
Well, but they had a huge impact on the national debate, Marjorie.
Where have they gone, Jim?
I have no idea where they're gone.
They dropped the ball.
They're not Occupy. Marianne Quincy, you're on with Attorney General Martha Coakley. Welcome, Marianne.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Ashley.
Oh, good afternoon, Martha. Good afternoon, Marjorie.
Hi, Marianne.
I have a question. Pardon me?
I just said hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Jim. I have a question in regard to the law that was used to prosecute Tim Cahill.
Sure.
My question is this. Am I understanding correctly that the law is there to prevent politicians from having an undue advantage to use their political position?
Yes. And in 2009, the legislature specifically added the component that there would be a criminal sanction if a politician, elected official, used his position to gain what's called an unwarranted privilege. Basically, if you use your position to get something that you could not get if you weren't in that position illegally, then there would be civil or criminal sanctions for that.
Marianne,
thank you.
This is my question.
Oh.
It has to do with the... Yes, thank you for answering
quickly,
that.
If you can, please.
All right, quickly. Would you be able to use that towards politicians who on their work days go and campaign for other politicians when they're supposed to be in at their job doing their work in regard to, say, Governor Patrick going out campaigning for X amount of days for President Barack Obama.
Ooh. How about it?
Well, you wouldn't use that statute. There are other ethical or campaign kinds of violations that could occur, but it is always very fact-specific. Elected officials do have leeway in terms of hours and what they get to do, but it wouldn't. It's a fair question, Marianne, but it wouldn't be the particular statute that we charged Tim Cahill with that you would look at for that kind of activity.
Marianne, thanks for the call.
Martha Coakley, because our emailer Stephen knows that you are a poet and he's finished with Tim Cahill. He sent us a poem. I'm not sure if he's to you and Jim or me and Jim.
Well, let's hear it anyway.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Mm-hmm. I'm finished with Cahill. But not with you two.
That's beautiful. Martha Coakley, can I ask you one last thing before you go here?
I'm not sure I know what that means.
You, either.
You filed the first challenge. That's why I moved on. You filed the first challenge to the Defense of Marriage
yes.
Act, and now it's going to the Supreme Court. Not your case.
Well,
but
yeah, we end glad, just to give Mary Bonato credit for that.
She's done unbelievable work,
she's
I should
fabulous.
Say. You were the first attorney general
yes,
in the country.
Correct.
Now this case is going to the Supreme Court, where I think you filed a friend of the court brief
yes.
on this Proposition 8, the ballot question in Massachusetts that banned gay marriage.
Yes.
Give us your... I think most fair-minded people consider this a conservative-leaning Supreme Court of the United States. Can you imagine a circumstance in which this is the court that essentially lets the gay marriage genie out of the proverbial bag or whatever?
Well, it's hard to imagine. I'm actually going to go to one of the arguments because there are two issues. One is the California case that is really the right to marry case. There's
sure.
a constitutional right to marry. I think they may try and find a – I'm guessing a little bit, but they may try and find a way to sidestep it on standing issues. I'm not sure because I don't think they're ready to do that. I think they're going to be hard-pressed to say given – you know, where Justice Roberts has tried to come out even on the health care issue, I think they're going to be hard-pressed to say that when states who have typically decided marriage, as Massachusetts has, as New York has, the federal government shouldn't be telling them otherwise or setting up two sets of books.
Defense of Marriage Act, which says this, not the exact words, that marriage is between a man and a woman.
And that's right. And yeah. for federal purposes, even in Massachusetts, if you're a veteran, if you work for the federal government on your Social Security and your income tax, you're not treated as married. And the astounding thing is there's a huge support from the business community saying, look, we're
huge.
Past this.
And from it's Mitt Romney's right-hand person.
Former elected Republican.
Ms. Meyer.
Beth Meyer. Yeah.
Beth Meyer.
There's a real common sense
yeah.
saying, look, let's move past this. This
Bain,
is crazy.
Bain and Company,
yes.
Mitt Romney's old company, is supporting
getting
rid of
DOMA. And it's amazing how fast that public opinion has changed, but it's changed and it's permanent. I think that those amicus briefs are going to have a real effect on the court.
Well, we've said this a million times. I think so much of the gay marriage deal has to do with age, that younger people, if you're under 50, you're much more with the program. If you're older, it's
maybe
a little
under
bit
40.
Hard. Maybe under
but
40.
It's got, but it's got majority support for the first time as
in the
of
country.
A year ago
yep.
across the whole population,
it's
which
been extraordinary
is very different.
To see this.
Yeah.
And I do want to give credit to GLAAD and Mary Bonato and, frankly, Massachusetts, because we were pushing. It was an uphill battle, but I think we're on the right side of history on this.
So if we invite you back, let's say, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, will you have a poem ready by then, Martha Coakley? I mean, get 3 weeks. Let's say 3 weeks.
I guess you didn't like Stevens. You didn't think that was a good one.
Yes, sir. It's a yes or no question. Just answer the question.
Of course. I'm
okay, so
always,
the answer is yes.
Yes. Next
3 weeks,
I come
yes.
back.
Is
okay.
that correct?
I wouldn't bother because he never wrote
have
you
an
a poem.
Epic poem.
I did work. Excuse
did
me.
Not.
On our last show
yeah.
on that prior location.
I wrote the poem.
Oh, you did write the poem,
I wrote
actually.
The poem.
I could
okay.
tell.
okay.
Martha Coakley, thanks so much. It's
my
good
pleasure.
To see you.
Good luck in the new gig. And
thanks.
I look forward to talking to you soon.
She's Attorney General of the Commonwealth, Martha Coakley. Thank you again for being with us. Up next, we continue with Law and Order, or rather, Breaking the Law and Order, Open Mic with Christopher Lydon. He'll argue that Whitey Bulger's brother Billy got off easy. That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.